just glanced at her as she came through, then looked back out, watching the grounds. Rachel wiped some tears off her face as she went down the cold stone steps. She had tried to keep them from coming, but a few got out before she could stop them. The guards on patrol ignored her as she walked fast over the cobblestones toward the garden. Away from the torches hung on the walls outside the castle, it was dark, but she knew her way. The grass was wet on her bare feet. At the third urn, she knelt down, looking to see that no one was watching, then reached under the flowers. She felt the cloth around the bread and pulled it out. Untying the knots, she laid the four corners back, then reached in her pockets and put the meat, the three hard rolls, and the cheese on top of the bread and tied the corners of the cloth back up. Just before she started running for the outer wall gate, she remembered and made a little gasp. She froze stiff, her eyes wide. She had forgotten Sarah. Her doll was still in her sleeping box. Princess Violet would find her doll. She would throw Sarah in the fire. Rachel couldn't leave her doll there. She was running away and not coming back. Sarah would be afraid without her. Sarah would get burned up. She pushed the bundle with the bread back under the flowers, looked around, and ran for the castle. She had to slow down and walk when she got close, back into the torchlight. One of the guards at the door looked down at her. "I just let you out," he said. She swallowed hard. "I know, but now I have to go back in for a few minutes. Forget something?" She nodded and managed to make herself say, "Yes." He shook his head and lifted the little window. "Open the door," he said to the guard inside. She heard the heavy bolt open. Once back inside, she looked down the hall. The big room with the black and white floor and the grand stairs was ahead, a few turns down some long halls and through a couple of big rooms. One of the big rooms was the dining room. That was the shortest way. But the queen or the princess might be there. Or even Father Rawl. They might see her. She couldn't let them see her. Princess Violet might take her up to her room and lock her in the sleeping box. It was late. She turned and went through the little door on the right. That was the servants' passageway. It was a lot longer, but no one important would be in the servant halls or on the servant stairs. None of the servants would stop her. They all knew she was the princess's playmate, and they didn't want the princess mad at them. She would have to go down through the place where the servants stayed, down under the big rooms and under the kitchen. The stairs were all stone, worn smooth on the front edges. One window at the top was uncovered, and it let in rain, and the steps always had water leaking from the stone walls running down them. Some places it was just a little, some places more, and there was green slime on some of the steps. She always had to step careful, to keep from stepping in the slime. Torches in iron brackets made the stone and the steps look red and yellow. There were some people in the halls on the bottom floor, servants carrying linens and blankets, washwomen with buckets of water and mops, and men carrying bundles of firewood for the fireplaces upstairs. Some of the people stopped and whispered to each other. They seemed excited. She heard Giller's name, and it made her get a lump in her throat. When she went past the servants' quarters, all the oil lamps were burning, hung from the big beams of the low ceilings, and there were bunches of people gathered around, telling each other what they had seen. Rachel saw one of the men talking loud, with mostly women, but some men, too, standing around him. It was Mr. Sanders, the man who wore the fancy coat and greeted the fine ladies and gentlemen when they came to dinner, and announced their names when they came in. "Heard it myself from those two that stand watch over the dining room. You know who I'm talking about? The young one, Frank, and the other, with the limp, Jenkins. Said the Dharan guards told them personal that there's going to be a search of the castle, top to bottom." "What are they looking for?" a woman asked. "Don't know. At least they didn't tell Frank and Jenkins. But I wouldn't want to be the one that had whatever they're after. Those men from Dahara could give you nightmares when you were wide awake."
Wish they'd find whatever it is under Violet's bed, somebody else said. It'd do her upright to get a nightmare for a change, 'stead of giving 'em. Everyone laughed.
Rachel went on through the big storeroom with all the columns. Barrels were on one side, all piled up in rows on top of one another. Boxes and crates and sacks were stacked up on the other side. The room smelled damp and musty, and she could always hear mice scratching about. She went down the middle, past the lamps hung on the side of columns, to the heavy door at the other end. The iron strap hinges creaked when she strained and pulled on the iron ring and opened the door. Rust from the ring got on her hands, so she wiped them on the stone. Another big door to the right led to the dungeon. She went up the stairway. It was dark, with only one torch at the top, and she could hear water go plink, 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 and echo. Through the door at the top that stood open a crack, she went down the stone block halls like the wind that was always in them. She was too scared to cry. She wanted Sarah to be safe, with her, and away from here. On the top floor, at last, she peeked her head around the door, looking up and down the hall that ran past Princess Violet's room. The hall was empty. Tiptoeing across the carpet with the pictures of the boats on it, she reached the entryway set back from the hall. She snuck into it, checking the hall again. Carefully, she opened the door a sliver. The room was dark. She slipped in and shut the door tight. There was a fire in the fireplace, but no lamps were lit. She sneaked across the floor, feeling the fur rug on her bare feet. She got down on her hands and knees and crept into her sleeping box and pulled the blanket back with one hand. She gasped. Sarah wasn't there. She felt just as if a cold wind had blown across her skin.
Looking for something?
It was Princess Violet's voice. For a minute, she couldn't move. She started to breathe hard, but she kept the tears from coming. She couldn't let Princess Violet see her cry. She backed out of the box and saw there was a black form standing in front of the fire. It was the princess. She took a step forward, away from the fireplace, toward Rachel. Her hands were behind her back. Rachel couldn't see what she had.
"I was just coming up to get in my box, to go to sleep."
"Is that so?"
Rachel could see better in the dark now, could see the smile on Princess Violet's face.
"You wouldn't happen to be looking for this, would you?"
She slowly pulled her hands out from behind her back. She had Sarah. Rachel's eyes went wide, and she suddenly felt like she had to go potty. "Princess Violet, please," she whined, her hands reached out, pleading.
"Come here and we'll talk about it."
Rachel stepped slowly to the princess, stopping in front of her, twisting her finger in the hem of her dress. The princess suddenly slapped her, harder than she had ever slapped her before. It was so hard that it made Rachel give out a little scream as she was knocked a step backward. She put her left hand over the stinging pain. Tears welled up in her eyes. She jammed her fist into her pocket, determined that she would not cry this time. The princess stepped to her and hit her across the other cheek with the back of her hand. Her knuckles hurt more than the first slap. Rachel gritted her teeth and clutched her fist around something in her pocket to keep from letting the tears come. Princess Violet stepped back to the fireplace.
"What did I tell you I would do if you ever had a doll?"
"Princess Violet, please don't." She was shaking because her face hurt so much, and because she was so scared.
"Please, let me keep her. She's no harm to you."
The princess laughed her awful laugh. "I'm gonna throw it in the fire, just like I told you I would, to teach you a lesson. What's her name?"
"She doesn't have a name."
"Well, no matter, she'll burn just as well."
She turned around to the fire. Rachel's fist was still clutched around the thing in her pocket. It was the magic fire stick Giller had given her. She pulled it out of her pocket and looked at it.
"Don't you dare throw my doll in the fire, or you'll be sorry!"
The princess spun around.
"What did you say? How dare you talk to me in that tone of voice? You're just a nobody! I'm a princess!"
Rachel touched the magic fire stick to the doily on a small, round marble table next to her.
"Light for me," she whispered.
The doily burst into flames. The princess's face looked surprised. Rachel touched the fire stick to a book on a short marble table. She looked quickly to the princess's eyes to make sure she was watching, then whispered again, and with a roar, it too burst into flames. Princess Violet's eyes were wide. Rachel picked up the book by a corner and threw it in the fireplace while the princess watched her. Rachel spun around, took a step, and put the fire stick against the princess.
"Give me my doll, or I'll burn you up."
"You wouldn't dare. Right now, if you don't, I'll set you on fire, and your skin will burn up."
Princess Violet pushed the doll at her.
"Here, please, Rachel, don't burn me. I'm afraid of fire."
Rachel took the doll with her left hand, hugging it to her, still holding the fire stick against the princess. Rachel was starting to feel sorry for her. Then she thought about how much her face hurt, more than it had ever hurt before.
"Let's just forget all about this, Rachel. You may keep the doll, all right?"
Her voice was getting real nice now, not mean like before. Rachel knew it was a trick. As soon as there were guards around, she knew the princess would say to chop her head off. Then Princess Violet would really laugh at her, and burn Sarah up, too.
"Get in the box," Rachel said. "Then you can see how you like it."
"What?"
Rachel pushed the fire stick a little harder. "Right now, or I'll burn you up." Princess Violet walked across the floor slow, with a fire stick at her back.
"Rachel, think about what you're doing. Are you really—"
"Be quiet and get inside, unless you want me to burn you."
The princess got down on her knees and crawled inside. Rachel looked in at her.
"Go to the back."
She did as she was told. Rachel shut the door with a clang and went to the drawer and got the key. She locked the iron door on the iron box, then put the key in her pocket. She got down on her knees and looked inside through the little window. She could hardly see the princess's eyes looking back in the dark.
"Good night, Violet. Go to sleep. I'm going to sleep in your bed tonight. I'm sick of your voice. If you make any noise at all, I'll come over and light your skin on fire. Do you understand?"
"Yes,"
came back the weak voice from the dark hole in the door. Rachel set Sarah down while she pulled the fur rug close and turned it over on the box, covering it all up. She went and bounced on the bed to make it squeak, to make Princess Violet think she was going to sleep in it. Rachel smiled and tiptoed all the way to the door as she hugged Sarah. After she had gone all the way back the way she had come, through the servants' passageways and to the door at the end, she looked carefully into the hall and went down to the big door with the guards. Rachel didn't say anything. She couldn't think of anything to say. She just stood and waited for them to open the door.
"So that's it. A doll you forgot," the guard said.
She just nodded. She heard the door clang shut behind as she went into the dark, to the garden. There were more guards than she was used to seeing. The regular guards had new ones with them, dressed different. The new ones looked at her more than the old ones did, and she could hear the regular ones telling them who she was. She tried not to let them see her looking back as she walked with her doll, holding it tight against her, trying to keep her feet from running. The bundle with the bread with the box in it was where she had left it, under the flowers. Rachel pulled it out, holding it in one hand by the knot, while she held Sarah to her chest with the other. As she walked through the garden, she wondered if Princess Violet still thought she was sleeping in the big bed, or if she knew it was a trick and was yelling for help. If she yelled for help, and the guards had come and found her in the box, they might already be looking for her. She had had to go the long way, It had taken a lot of time for her legs to take her under the whole castle and back up again. Rachel listened carefully for shouts, to see if they were looking for her yet. She could hardly breathe, hoping she could get out of the castle before they chased after her. She remembered Mr. Sanders saying they were going to search the castle. She knew what they were looking for. They wanted the box. She had promised Giller she would get it away, so they couldn't have it and hurt all those people. A lot of men were on the walk at the top of the wall. When she got almost to the door through the wall, she slowed down. Before, there were always two of the Queen's guard there. Now there were three men. Two she recognized. They wore the red tunics with the black wolf's head, the Queen's guard. But the other was dressed different, in dark leather, and he was a lot bigger. He was one of the new men. Rachel didn't know if she should keep going or run away. But run away where? She had to get through the wall before she could really run away. Before she could decide what to do, they saw her, so she kept going. One of the regular guards turned to lift the bolt. The new man put his arm up to stop him. "It's just the princess's playmate. The princess puts her out sometimes." "No one goes out," the new man said to him. The regular guard stopped opening the door. "Sorry, little one, but you heard him. No one goes out." Rachel stood there with her mouth stuck shut. Her eyes stared at the new man while he looked down at her. She swallowed. Giller was depending on her to get the box out. There was no other way out. She tried to think what Giller would do. "Well, all right," she said at last. "It's cold tonight. I'd rather stay in anyway." "Well, there you go, then. You get to stay in tonight," the regular guard said. "What's your name?" Rachel asked. He looked a little surprised. "Queen's Lancer Reed." With her doll in her hand, Rachel pointed at the other regular guard. "What's yours?" "Queen's Lancer Walcott." "Queen's Lancer Reed and Queen's Lancer Walcott," she repeated to herself. "All right, I think I can remember." She pointed at the new man, the doll swinging back and forth by its arm when she did. "And what's your name?" He hooked his thumbs in his belt. "What do you want to know for?" She hugged Sarah back to her chest. "Well, the princess yelled at me to tell me to be put out tonight. If I don't go out, she'll be spitting mad and want to chop my head off for not doing as she said. So I want to tell her who wouldn't let me be put out. I want your name so she won't think I'm making it up, so she can come and ask you herself. She scares me. She's been starting to say to have people's heads chopped off." All three of them stood back up a little and looked at each other. "That's true enough," Queen's Lancer Reed said to the new man. "The princess is turning into her mother's daughter. A little handful, what with the queen letting her cut her teeth on the axe now." "No one goes out. Those are our orders," the new man repeated. "Well, the two of us are for doing as the princess orders." Queen's Lancer Reed turned a little and spat. "Now, if you want her kept in, that's fine by us, so long as it's clear who's next on the block. If it comes down to it, we told you to let her out, just like the princess said." "We're not going to the block with you." The other guard, Walcott, nodded that he agreed. "Not for the threat from a little girl no taller than that." He held his hand out, level with the top of her head. "I'll not tell them we three big, strong soldiers all agreed we thought she was dangerous. It's your call, but it'll be your head, not ours, if you go against the princess. You will answer to the Queen's axeman, not us." The new man looked down at her. He seemed a little mad. He looked back at the other two a minute, then down at her again. "Well, it's obvious she's no threat. The orders were meant to protect from threats, so I guess..." Queen's Lancer Walcott started lifting up the heavy bolt on the door. "But I want to know what she's got there," the new man said. "Just my supper and my doll," Rachel said, trying to make it sound unimportant. "Let's have a look," Rachel laid the bundle down on the ground and untied the knots, laying the corners back. She handed Sarah up to him. He took Sarah in his big hand, turning her around, looking. He turned her upside down and lifted her dress with his big finger. Rachel kicked him in the leg, hard as she could.
"Don't do that! Don't you have no respect?" she yelled.
The other two guards laughed. "You find anything dangerous under there?" Queen's Lancer Reed asked. The new man looked over at the other two, handing Sarah back down to her. "What else have you got there?"
"I told you, my supper."
He started to bend over. "Well, a little thing like you has no need for a whole loaf of bread."
"That's mine!" she yelled. "Leave it be!"
"Leave it alone," Queen's Lancer Walcott told the new man. "She gets little enough. It looked to you like the princess overfeeds her?" The new man straightened up. "I guess not." He let out a deep breath. "Go on, get out of here." Rachel tied the cloth back over the bread and other food as fast as she could. She held Sarah tight to her with one hand and held the bundle just as tight with the other as she went between the men's legs and out the door. When she heard it clang shut, she started running. She ran fast as she could, not looking back, too afraid to know for sure if anyone was chasing her. After a time, she had to know, and finally stopped to check. No one. Out of breath, she sat down to rest on a fat root in the path. She could see the outline of the castle against the starry sky, the notched top edge of the wall, the towers with lights in them. She was never going back there again. Never. Her and Giller were going to run away to where people were nice, and they were never going to come back. While she was panting, she heard a voice.
"Rachel?"
It was Sarah, she realized. She laid Sarah in her lap on top of the bundle.
"We're safe now, Sarah. We got away."
Sarah smiled.
"I'm so glad, Rachel."
"We're never going back to that mean place again."
"Rachel, Giller wants you to know something."
She had to lean close. She could hardly hear Sarah's voice.
"What?"
"That he can't come with you. You must go on without him."
Rachel started to get tears.
"But I want him to come with me."
"He would like to, more than anything, child. But he must stay and keep them from finding you, so you can get away. It's the only way to keep you safe."
"But I'll be afraid by myself."
"You won't be by yourself, Rachel. You will have me with you. Always."
"But what am I to do? Where am I to go?"
"You must run away.
Giller says not to go to your old wayward pine. They will find you there." Rachel's eyes got big when she heard this.
"Go to a different wayward pine. Then the next day, another. Just keep running away and hiding until the winter comes. Then find some nice people who will take good care of you."
"All right. If Giller says so, that's what I'll do."
"Rachel, Giller wants you to know he loves you."
"I love Giller, too,"
Rachel said. "More than anything." The doll smiled. All at once, the woods lit up with blue and yellow light. She looked up. Then came a sudden loud bang that made her jump. Her mouth dropped open. Her eyes were wide as they would go. A giant ball of fire came up from the castle, from behind the walls. The ball of fire lifted into the air. Sparks dropped from it, and black smoke rolled away. The fire turned to black smoke as it went higher, until it was all dark again.
"Did you see that?" she asked Sarah.
Sarah didn't say anything.
"I hope Giller is all right."
She looked down at the doll, but she didn't say anything, or even smile back. Rachel hugged Sarah to her and picked up the bundle.
"We better get going, like Giller said."
When she went past the lake, She threw the key to her sleeping box as far as she could, out into the water, and smiled when she heard it splash. Sarah didn't say anything as they rushed away from the castle, down the path. Rachel remembered what Giller said, that she shouldn't go to the same wayward pine. She turned and went down a deer trail, through the bramble, in a new direction. West. Chapter 34. There was a sound, small, soft, spitting. In the fog of half-sleep, half-wake, it made no sense, no matter how hard he tried to understand it. Slowly at first, then with accelerating urgency, he came awake, aware of the aroma of cooking meat. Immediately he regretted the experience of being conscious, the memories of what had happened, his longing for Kaelin. His knees were pulled up to his chest with his head resting against them. The bark of the tree at his back dug painfully into his flesh, and his muscles were cramped to near paralysis from sleeping in the same position all night. With his head against his knees, he couldn't see anything, except that it was only just beginning to lighten with dawn. There was someone, or something, near him. Continuing to feign sleep, he took assessment of where his hands were in relation to his weapons. The sword was a goodly reach, and then a long pull to draw it. The knife wasn't. His fingertips were touching the hickory handle. Flexing his fingers slowly, carefully, he worked the handle into his palm, tightening his grip around it. Whatever it was near to his left side. A spring and a thrust with the knife, he thought. He took a careful peek. With a shock, he saw that it was Kaelin. She was sitting, leaning against the log, watching him. A rabbit was cooking on the fire. He sat up straight. "What are you doing here?" he asked cautiously. "Is it all right if we talk?" Richard slid the knife back into its sheath, stretched his legs, rubbing the cramps from them. "I thought we did all our talking last night." He immediately winced at his own words. She gave him an unreadable look. "I'm sorry," he said, softening his tone. "Of course we can talk. What do you want to talk about?" She shrugged in the dim light. "I've been doing a lot of thinking." She had a length of birch branch that he had cut the night before for the fire, and was stripping off pieces of white bark. "Last night, after I left..." "Well, I knew you had a headache. How did you know that?" She shrugged again. "I can always tell by the look in your eyes when you have a headache." Her voice was soft, gentle. "I knew you hadn't been getting much sleep lately and that it was my fault, so I decided that before I left, I would stand watch for you while you slept. So I went over there," she pointed with the branch, "in those trees where I could keep my eye on you." She looked down at the branch as she peeled off strips of bark. "I wanted to make sure you got some sleep." "You were there the whole night?" Richard was afraid to hope at what this meant. She nodded, but didn't look up. "While I was watching, I decided to make a snare, like you taught me, to see if I could catch you some breakfast. While I was sitting there, I did a lot of thinking. Well, mostly I cried for a long time. I couldn't stand it that you thought those things about me. It hurt that you thought of me like that. It made me angry, too." Richard decided it was best not to say anything while she struggled to find the words. He didn't know what to say, and was afraid if he said anything it might make her leave again. Kaelin pulled off a curl of birch bark and tossed it in the fire, where it sizzled and flared to flame. "Then I thought about what you said, and I decided there were some things I needed to tell you about how to conduct yourself when you are with the Queen," and then I remembered some things I needed to tell you about which roads to avoid and about where you might go. I just keep thinking about things I needed to tell you, things you need to know. Before I knew it, I realized you were right. About everything. Richard thought she looked like she was near tears, but she didn't cry. Instead, she picked at the branch with her fingernail and avoided his eyes. Still, he kept quiet. Then she asked him a question he wasn't expecting. Do you think Shota is pretty? He smiled. Yes. But not as pretty as you. Kaelin smiled and pushed some hair back over her shoulder. Not many would dare to say that to a... She caught herself again. Her secret stood between them like a third person. She started again. There is an old women's proverb. Maybe you have heard it before. Never let a beautiful woman pick your path for you when there is a man in her line of sight. Richard laughed a little and stood to stretch his legs. No, I've not heard that before. He half leaned, half sat against the log as he folded his arms. He didn't think Kaelin needed to worry about Shota stealing his heart. Shota had said she would kill him if she ever saw him again. Even without Shota's vow, Kaelin had no cause for worry. She tossed the branch aside and stood next to him, leaning her hip against the log. She looked into his eyes at last, her eyebrows wrinkled together. Richard, her voice was low, almost a whisper. Last night I figured out I was being very stupid. I had been afraid the witch woman would kill me, and all of a sudden I realized she was about to succeed. Only I was doing it for her, letting her pick my path for me. You were right about it all. I should have known better than to disregard the things a seeker says. She looked back down at the ground before her green eyes came back up to his. If it is not too late, I would like my job back, as your guide. Richard couldn't believe it was over. He had never been this happy, this relieved, in his life. Instead of answering, he reached out and pulled her into his arms, hugged her tight to him. Her arms slipped around him as she laid her head against his chest for a moment. Then she pushed away. Richard, there is one other matter. Before you can say you will take me back, you must hear the rest of it. I can't go on any more without telling you about me. About what I am. It's cleaving my heart because I'm supposed to be your friend. I should have told you from the beginning. I have never had a friend like you before. I didn't want it to end. Her gaze left his. But now it must, she added faintly. Kaelin, I told you before. You're my friend, and nothing can change that. This secret can. Her shoulders were slumped. This is about magic. Richard wasn't sure anymore that he wanted to hear her secret. He had just gotten her back. He didn't want to lose her again. He squatted down in front of the fire, picking up the roasting stick with the rabbit. Sparks swirled up into the waning darkness. He felt proud of her, for catching the rabbit on her own the way he had taught her. Kaelin, I don't care what your secret is. I care about you, that's all that matters. You don't have to tell me. Come on, the rabbit is done. Come and have some. Cutting off a piece with his knife, he handed it to her as she sat on the ground next to him, pulling her hair back off her face. The meat was hot, so she held it lightly with her fingertips and blew to cool it. Richard cut a piece for himself and sat back. Richard, when you first saw Shota, did she really look like your mother? He looked over to Kaelin's face, lit by the fire, and nodded before he took a bite. Your mother was very pretty. You have her eyes and her mouth.
Richard smiled a little at the memory. But it wasn't really her.
So you felt angry that Shota was pretending to be someone she could not be? That she was deceiving you?
She took a bite of the rabbit, breathing in through her mouth because the meat was still hot. She watched him carefully.
Richard shrugged, feeling the sting of sorrow.
I guess. It wasn't fair.
Kaelin chewed a minute, and then swallowed.
That is why I must tell you who I am. Even if you hate me for it. Because you have been my friend. Although I have not been the kind of friend you deserve. That is the other reason I came back. Because I didn't want someone else to tell you. I wanted you to hear it from me. After I tell you, if you want me to, I will leave.
Richard looked up at the sky, at the color coming slowly to it. He suddenly wished Kaelin weren't telling him what she was. He wished things could stay the way they were.
Don't worry, I'm not sending you away. We have a job to do. Remember what Shota said? The Queen won't have the box long. That can only mean someone will take it from her. Better us than Dark and Rawl.
Kaelin put her hand on his arm. I don't want you to decide until you hear what I have to say. Until you hear what I am. Then, if you want me to leave, I will understand.
She looked intently into his eyes.
Richard, I just want you to know that I have never cared for anyone the way I care for you, nor will I ever again. But it is not possible for it to go beyond that. Nothing can ever come of it. Nothing good, anyway.
He refused to believe that.
There was a way. There had to be.
Richard took a heavy breath, letting it out slowly.
All right, then. Out with it.
She nodded.
Remember when I told you that some who lived in the Midlands were creatures of magic, and that they couldn't give up that magic, because it was part of them?
He nodded to her.
Well, I am one of those creatures. I am more than a woman.
So, what are you?
I am a confessor.
Confessor.
Richard knew that word. Every muscle in his body went stiff. His breath caught in his throat.
The Book of Counted Shadows suddenly flooded through his mind. Verification of the truth of the words of the Book of Counted Shadows, if spoken by another, rather than read by the one who commands the boxes, can only be ensured by the use of a confessor. His mind raced, as if flipping the pages in his mind's eye, scanning the words, trying to remember the whole book, trying to remember if confessor was mentioned again. No, it wasn't. He knew every word in the book, and confessor was in it only once. At the beginning. He could remember puzzling over what a confessor could be. He hadn't even been sure before that it was a person. He felt the weight of the tooth hanging around his neck.
Kaelin frowned at the look on his face.
Do you know what a confessor is?
No, he managed. I heard the word before, that's all. From my father. But I don't know what it means.
He struggled to regain control of himself.
So what does it mean, to be a confessor?
Kaelin pulled her knees up, hugging her arms around them, withdrawing just a little.
It's a power, magic power, that is passed from mother to daughter, going back almost as far as there have been the lands, back beyond the dark time. Richard didn't know what the dark time was, but didn't interrupt. It is something we are born with. Magic that is part of us, and cannot be separated from us any more than you could be separated from your heart. Any woman who is a confessor will bear children who are confessors, always. But the power is not the same in all of us. In some it is weaker, in some stronger.
So you can't get rid of it, even if you wanted to. But what sort of magic is it?
She looked away, to the fire. It's a power invoked by touch. It's always there, inside us. We don't bring it out to use it. Instead, we must always hold it in, and use it by releasing our grip of it, relaxing our hold and letting it come forth.
Sort of like holding your stomach in.
She smiled at his analogy.
Sort of.
And what does this power do? She twisted the corner of her cloak. It does not reveal itself well in words. I never thought it would be this troublesome to explain, but to someone who is not from the Midlands... Well, it's difficult to put into words. I've never had to do this before, and I'm not even sure it can be done accurately. It's a little like trying to explain fog to a blind person.
Try.
She nodded and stole a look into his eyes. It is the power of love. Richard almost laughed.
And I'm supposed to be afraid of the power of love?
Kaylin's back stiffened. Indignation flared in her eyes. Indignation and the kind of timeless look Addie and Shota had flashed him. One that said that his words were disrespectful, that even his small smile was insolent. It was a countenance he was not used to seeing her direct at him. He felt a cold realization that Kaylin was not used to having anyone smile about her power and who she was. Her look said more to him about her power than any words could have. Whatever her magic was, it was definitely not something to be smiled about. His small grin withered. When she seemed sure he was not about to say anything else flippant, she went on. You don't understand. Do not take it lightly. Her eyes narrowed. Once touched by it, you are no longer the person you were. You are changed forever. Forevermore you are devoted to the one who touches you, to the exclusion of all else. What you wanted, what you were, who you were, no longer means anything to you. You would do anything for the one who touches you. Your life is no longer yours, it is hers. Your soul is no longer yours, it is hers. The person you were no longer exists. Richard felt bumps on the skin of his arms.
How long does this magic, whatever it is, how long does it last?
As long as the one I touch is alive, she said evenly. Richard felt the chill run the rest of the way through him.
So, it's sort of like you bewitch people.
She let out a breath. Not exactly, but if it helps you to understand, I guess you could put it that way. But the touch of a confessor is much more powerful, and final. A bewitching could be removed. My touch cannot. Shota was bewitching you, even though you did not realize it. It's an incremental thing. Witches cannot help it, it's their way. But your anger, and the anger from the sword, protected you. The touch of my power is all at once, and final. Nothing could protect you. The person I touch cannot be brought back, because once I touch them, that person is no longer there. That person is gone forever. Their free will is gone forever. One reason I was afraid to go to Shota was because witches hate confessors. They are fiercely jealous of our power. Jealous that once touched, the person is totally devoted. The one touched by a confessor would do anything she says. She gave him a hard look. Anything. Richard felt his mouth go dry as his thoughts scattered in every direction at once, trying desperately to hold on to his hopes, his dreams. The only way he could hold it together and gain time to think was to ask questions. Does it work on everyone? Everyone human? Except Dark and Rawl. The wizards warned me that the magic of Warden protects him from our touch. He has nothing to fear from me. On those who are not human, it mostly doesn't work because they don't have the capacity for compassion, which the magic requires in order to work. A gar, for example, would not be changed by my touch. It works on some other creatures, but not exactly the same as it does a human. He watched her from under his eyebrows. Sure. You touched her, didn't you? Kaelin nodded and leaned back a little, the slump settling back into her shoulders. Yes. She was dying and lonely. She was suffering the pain of being away from her kind, the pain of dying alone. She asked me to touch her. My touch took her fear, and replaced it with a love for me that left no room for her own pain, for her own loneliness. Nothing was left of her except her love for me.
What about when I first met you, when the Quad was chasing us? You touched one of those men, too, didn't you?
Kaelin nodded, leaning back the rest of the way against the log, pulling her cloak around her, looking into the fire. Even though they are sworn to kill me, once I touch one of them, they are mine, she said with finality. They will fight to the death to protect me.
That is the reason Rawl sends 4 men to kill a confessor. It's expected she will touch one, then there are 3 left to kill him and her. It takes the 3 left because the one will fight so fiercely he usually kills one, often 2, but that still leaves at least 1 to kill the confessor. On a rare occasion, he will kill the remaining 3. That happened to me with the Quad that chased me before the wizard sent me across the boundary. A Quad is the most economical unit to send. They almost always succeed, and if they don't, Rawl will simply send another. We weren't killed on the cliff because you separated them. The one I touched killed the other with him while you held off the other 2. Then he went after the remaining 2, but you had pushed one off the edge, so he used his own life to take the leader over the cliff. He did that because then there wouldn't be any chance of losing in a sword fight. It meant his life, too, but that didn't matter to him after I touched him. It was the only way for him to be sure he protected me.
Can't you simply touch all 4?
No, the power is expended with each use. It takes time for it to recover. He felt the hilt of his sword against his elbow, and a sudden thought came to him.
When we came through the boundary, and that last man of the Quad was after you, and I killed him, I wasn't really saving you, was I?
She was silent for a moment before answering. One man, no matter how big or strong, is no threat to a confessor, even a weak confessor, much less me. If you hadn't come when you did, I would have dealt with him. I'm sorry, Richard, she whispered. But there was no need for you to have killed him. I could have handled it.
Well, he said dryly.
At least I saved you from having to do it. She didn't answer, only looked sadly at him. It seemed she had nothing to say that could bring him any comfort.
How much time?
He asked.
How much time does it take to recover after a confessor has used her power?
In every confessor, the power is different. In some it is weaker, and it may take several days and nights to recover. In most it takes about one day and one night. Richard looked over at her. And in you? She looked up at his eyes, almost as if she wished he hadn't asked the question. About 2 hours. He turned back to the fire, not liking the sound of her answer. Is that unusual? She let out a breath. So I have been told. Her voice sounded weary. Shorter time to recover the power also means the power is stronger, works more powerfully in the one touched. That is why some of the quad members I touch are able to kill the other three. It would not be so for a confessor with a weaker power. Confessors have position according to their power, because the ones with the strongest power will bear daughters who have the best chance of having that stronger power. There is no jealousy among the confessors for those with the strongest power. Only deeper affection and devotion in times of trouble. Like since Rawl came through the boundary. The lower ranks will protect the higher, with their lives if need be. He knew she wasn't going to say it unless he asked. So he did. And what is your rank? Her eyes stared unblinking at the fire. All confessors follow me. Many laid down their lives to protect mine. Her voice caught for a moment. That I might survive, and somehow use my power to stop Rawl. Of course, there are none to follow me now. I am the only one left. Darkon Rawl has killed every last one. I'm sorry, Kaelin, he said softly. He was only just beginning to comprehend the importance of the woman she was. So, do you have a title? What do people call you? I am the Mother Confessor. Richard tensed. The sound of Mother Confessor had the chill of terrible authority to it. Richard felt a little overwhelmed. He had always known Kaelin was important, but he had dealt with important people when he was a guide and had learned not to be awed by them. But he never knew she was someone of such prominence. Mother Confessor? Even if he was just a guide and she was this important, he didn't care. He could live with that. Surely she could, too. He wasn't going to lose her, or send her away because of who she was. I don't know what that means. Is it something like a princess or a queen? Kaelin lifted an eyebrow to him. Queens bow down to the Mother Confessor. Now he felt intimidated. You are more than a queen? He winced. The dress I wore when you first saw me, that is a confessor's dress. We all wear them so there can be no mistaking who we are, although most people of the Midlands would recognize us no matter how we were to dress. All confessors, no matter their age, wear a confessor's dress that is black. Except the Mother Confessor. Her dress is white. Kaelin seemed a little annoyed by having to explain her eminence. It feels very odd to me to explain all this, Richard. Everyone in the Midlands knows it all, so I have never had to think about how to put it all into words. It sounds so, I don't know, so arrogant when I put words to it. Well, I'm not from the Midlands. Just try, I need to understand. She nodded and looked back up at him. Kings and queens are masters of their land. They each have their own domain. There are a number of them in the Midlands. Other lands are ruled in different manners, such as by councils. Some are places of magic creatures. The Night Wisps, for example. No humans live in their lands. The place where the confessors live, my home, is called Idendril. It is also the home of the wizards and the central council of the Midlands. Idyndrill is a beautiful place. It's been a long time since I have been home, she said wistfully. The confessors and the wizards are closely linked, bonded, much the way the Old One, Zed, is linked with the Seeker. No one holds claim to Idyndrill. No ruler would dare to lay claim to it. They all fear it, fear the confessors and the wizards. All the lands of the Midlands contribute to the support of Idyndrill. They all pay tribute. Confessors are above the law of any one land, much the same way the Seeker is ultimately above any law but his own. Yet at the same time, we serve all the people of the Midlands through the Central Council. In the past, arrogant rulers had thought to make the confessors submit to their word. In those times, there were far-sighted confessors, now revered as legends, who knew they must lay the foundation of our independence, or forever submit to domination. So the Mother Confessor took the rulers with her power. The rulers were removed from their thrones, and replaced with new rulers who understood that confessors were to be left alone. The old rulers, those who were taken, were kept in Idyndrill as little more than slaves. The confessors took these old rulers with them when they traveled to the different lands, made them carry the provisions and luxuries of travel. Back then, there was more ceremony surrounding the confessors than there is now. Anyway, it made the intended impression. I don't understand, Richard said. Kings and queens must be powerful leaders. Didn't they have protection? Didn't they have guards and others to keep them safe? How could a confessor get near to a king or queen to touch them? Yes, they have protection. A lot, in fact. But it's not as difficult as it sounds. A confessor touches one person, maybe a guard. Then she has an ally. He takes her to another. He is taken. Soon she is inside. Each person she touches can get her close to one of higher rank, and gains her more allies. Working her way up through the trusted positions and advisors, she can be at the king or queen sooner than you would think, and often before so much as an eyebrow is raised, much less an alarm. Any confessor could do it. The Mother Confessor, even easier. The Mother Confessor, with a band of her sisters, would sweep through a castle like the plague. Not that such an effort is without danger. Many confessors died. But the goal was seen as worth it. This is the reason no land is closed to a confessor, though it may be to every other. Closing a land to a confessor is tantamount to an admission of guilt, and is sufficient cause for the leader to be taken from power. This is why the Mud People, for example, allow me in, even though they do not often let other outsiders in. Not allowing a confessor access would raise questions and suspicions. A leader involved in any sort of plot would gladly grant a confessor free access to try to hide their involvement in any subversion. In those times, there were some among the confessors who were more than willing to use their power as they wanted, to root out wrongdoing as they saw it. The wizards exerted their influence to bring this under control, but the confessor's zeal showed the people what a confessor was capable of. But those were different times. Taking a ruler from power. Different times or not, Richard found all this hard to take, to justify. What gave these confessors the right? She shook her head slowly. What we are doing now, you and I, is it much different from what has been done in the past? Taking a ruler from power? We all do what we think we must, what we think is right. He shifted his weight uncomfortably. I see your point, he admitted. Have you done this before? Removing a ruler? She shook her head. Still, the leaders of the lands are all keen to avoid my attention. It is much the same way with the Seeker. At least it used to be, before you and I were born. Then Seekers were more feared and respected than confessors. She gave him a meaningful look. They, too, have dethroned kings. Now, though, because the Old One was ignored, and the sword had become a political favor, they are seen as less. Little more than pawns. Thieves. I'm not sure that has changed, Richard said, more to himself than to her. Much of the time I feel as if I am nothing more than a pawn, being moved by others. Even by Zed and...
He shut his mouth.